listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Good Sunday afternoon, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our show today is being produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. And our generous sponsors for today's show is TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving individual customers, creative professionals, and Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation on its expertise in technology, sales, and service. As a company that believes in honest and forthright business practices, TechServe is proud to sponsor Heritage Radio Network and the promotion of sustainable lifestyles. Thank you, TechServe. And my guest today is none other than one of my cheese heroes, Max McCalman, who is Dean of Curriculum, Maitre Fromager, and Affineur at the Artisanal Cheese Center, which you can also find online at artisanalcheese.com. And I'm going to spell it because artisanal is one of the most misspelled words in the cheese world. That is A-R-T-I-S-A-N-A-L, cheese.com. So thanks for joining me today, Max.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Ann.
Yeah. So just before the show, you dropped the bomb on me that you had once been a DJ on the radio.
Yeah, that was my first job out of college, was to be I had the 12 to 6 shift on an FM radio station.
Wow.
Mostly playing a new wave music, like the Groundhogs and Brian Eno and stuff like that. It was long time ago, but that was what I liked, and that's what I played, and I had my own playlist, and so that's what I did.
And what was your DJ name, did you say?
Maximum Volume.
I love it.
Yeah, and so later, finding a career in cheese, I soon discovered that if you wanted to actually sustain yourself in the cheese business, you had to have volume. So Maximum Volume stuck.
Nice.
Yeah.
Maximum Volume. I thought maybe you meant volume of your voice when you taught your classes to get people to focus.
We have some fairly rowdy classes at the Artisanal Cheese Center.
I believe it.
Yeah. Put a little. The cheese is one thing, but then you back it up with a little wine or spirits or beer. Then after a few minutes, then sometimes people become encouraged.
Downright so vociferous.
Yes.
Yes. And so, I wanted to talk to you about, lots of things. I mean, we have a half hour, which is never enough time. I guess, you know, you wear a lot of hats and have throughout your career as a cheese man. And I was wondering if maybe you could sort of take us through your personal development as an affineur and a maître fromager.
Okay. I've always loved cheese. My first favorite food, cheese. And so I finally found a way to make a living being a cheese person, working at a Picholin restaurant as the first full-time cheese guy in a restaurant in North America. And I was given the title of fromager, but because the restaurant couldn't justify the payroll for a full-time cheese guy, I wore the hat of being maitre d' and cheese guy. So we put the two jobs together, and I became the maître fromager.
I like that. So is that the first instance of that term being used?
Oh, well, here. But, of course, in France, it's either a cheesemaker or a cheese expert. And I didn't know, but I was the maître d' in the fromager, so maître fromager. And turned out that was an actual occupation. But people were asking me questions, and I didn't know the answers because it's such a vast world, as you know. There's so much, there's so many facets to the cheese world. So I had to study cheese, and I became a cheese scholar, and that's what I do. I study cheese.
And how did you begin your study? I mean, because like you said, it's not something that anyone here really ever did as a profession. So mm-hmm. what were the steps that you took to start to educate yourself?
Well, we had some good assistance by some of the people that supplied cheese to us, like our friends at Neil's Yard Dairy, that would come in and look at what we were doing with our cheese and made some recommendations for taking care of our cheese. And I joined the American Cheese Society in 1995, which is now 26 years old, I think it is.
Yeah.
And now with over 1,300 members across North America. And so I started studying cheese and went to conferences and went to workshops and started eating as much cheese as possible. I think the best way to learn about cheese is to eat it.
I agree wholeheartedly.
And, yeah. So, and then got to later on, I was asked to judge in competitions and met more people in the cheese world, and then had the opportunity to travel to dairies here in the United States and then into Europe more and more, and see the land and the animals and the cheese making process and help make cheese. And and then also one thing that helped me to learn about cheese, because you can only learn so much by reading it. We did say, of course, you eat it, but to have a platform of a platform such as wine, that was my previous career. I was a wine guy mostly, and so I would find the relationship of cheese to wine, and then I started to taste cheese from an aesthetic point of view.
I remember in your book, The Cheese Plate, which for me was like a great eye-opening book when I was first getting started, you know, loving and eating cheese and trying to pursue it also as a career. You talk about the idea of, you know, terroir and wines or spirits or beverages produced from certain regions going well with the cheeses that go that are from those regions, and or at least with the flavor components found in those cheeses. Mm-hmm. And that was, for me, I was like, oh, it was like one of those aha moments, even though it, in retrospect, it makes so much sense. You know, of course, all those things grew up out of the same soil, but
the same water, the same climate, and everything else. Unfortunately, I think that this is something that too many people lazily rely upon as a good indicator of what makes for a successful match between cheese and any other food or beverage is where it came from, because there's so much that goes into cheese making. And in the case of wine, so much that goes into winemaking that gives the cheese its characteristics, and for the wine or other food or beverage, what shapes the flavor, aroma, texture, look of the other partner. That to say that they just because it came from the same place, I think is a little simple. It should work, and in more cases than not, cheeses and wines do work well together, but some of the best pairings between cheese and wines that I've discovered so far are not made anywhere close to each other. And
can you name a few that that really surprised you over the years as being spectacular pairings?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of the Shiraz from Australia, those jammy types of Shiraz, but some of the best pairings that I found for those kinds of wines are the thistle-rendered cheeses from Iberia, such as Torta del Casar or Serena, Azeitón, Serpa, and those types, those meaty, nutty, sweet, slightly salty, olive oil-flavored sheep's milk cheeses, and how they play off of Shiraz as a, that's a 1+1=3 kind of a pairing between cheese and the wine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's it is an art to be able to do those kinds of pairings. And you know, you were definitely one of the premier educators of people about how to do that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the classes that you've developed as Dean of Curriculum at the Artisanal Cheese Center?
Yes. Well, tomorrow we have tomorrow, Monday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we have the next installment of our Master Intensive series where we teach everything that we can possibly teach about cheese in 3 days' time. And it does have part of what makes the Master Series a draw is the cheese and wine part. And so the Master Series is what gave my publisher the idea to produce this latest book, Mastering Cheese. Why not take all the curriculum that we offer at the Artisanal Cheese Center and put it into one big book? And at the time, it sounded like a pretty good idea to write a book, and I asked, okay, what is my budgeted word count to write a book titled Mastering Cheese? And it was only 300,000 words. And,
should be like the Bible.
It I came in with 450,000 words and had to pare it down to, I was able to keep 80,000 over budget. But it's the cheese and wine is one part. There's another course that I developed last year. It's about the Mediterranean diet, the French paradox, and how having a little cheese and a little bit of wine or beer, but having a little bit of cheese every day is very important, and it is so nutritious, and so it is such a near-perfect food, and with a near-complete, it is a near-complete food with a great track record for food safety. So part of my mission has become rescuing cheese, not just rescuing individual cheeses and finding new cheeses and helping cheese producers find a market, but also to allay people's fears about cheese because it still continues to have a bad rap.
That
I know you face it all every day.
Behind the retail counter, yeah, it's ridiculous. And I feel like, you know, here I eat tons of cheese.
And you look great.
You eat tons of cheese. Oh, thank you.
No.
And everyone, when I worked at Murray's, you know, back in the day, all of us cheesemongers were there behind the counter, which I think was like, you know, 24 inches wide between, you know, the retail counter and the sink in the back. And we all managed to fit through there. So I think that there is kind of unwarranted, the cheese has gotten the bad rap. It seems like there's a different food every 20 years or so. For a while, it was eggs. You know, now it seems to be cheese. It's the culprit behind, I don't know, fat, cholesterol, you name it. Do you have any advice that you can give our listeners about, or just insight as to how people can eat cheese, not be so concerned about that?
Well, we must remember that we're mammals. Our first food was milk, and that was our only food for the first several weeks or months out of our lives. So it must be pretty wonderful, and that's what cheese is made from. It's milk. And if that's your only food for your formative, your earliest formative days of your life, then it's going to be pretty wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's what cheese is mostly.
Concentrated milk,
preserved milk, without the lactose. Milk has lactose and cheese is virtually lactose free. So people should not be afraid of cheese because of a fear of lactose. Although some people can have some other issues with cheese. It could be a low tolerance for certain proteins that are found in certain milk types, but it may not be a lifelong problem. But I like to recommend that people have a variety of cheese types because some cheeses offer you some, if it's for nutritional purposes, some cheese will give you maybe a little more vitamin B2 and some give you more vitamin A or some give you more zinc or whatever. But to have a variety, then you have all those micronutrients and and also it's just much more pleasurable. And if you're enjoying cheese with a friend or with a group, if you're entertaining with cheese, then you have a better chance of satisfying everyone's taste by having a variety of cheese types.
Yeah. And so I remember in your book, Mastering Cheese, which, by the way, everybody should pick up a copy of. It's a really wonderful book. It's called, the full title is Mastering Cheese, Lessons for Connoisseurship from a Maître Fromager. And I remember reading in the Cheese is Good for You part of the book that I was very interested in, you talking about cheese versus eggs, actually, and nutritional value. And I think you were saying something about a 2 to 4 ounce slice of cheese providing more nutritional value than two eggs would.
A better source of protein, and certainly a lot more calcium. Calcium being heralded as the new miracle mineral. But there are all those other nutrients that you get from cheese. Again, it's your first food, so it's got to be pretty good. Now, cheese doesn't give you fiber. It doesn't give you vitamin C. But otherwise, pretty much everything else that you need is there. One thing that's interesting about cheese is that it doesn't give you enough calories. And before you reach satiety, that is. And so you do get calories from cheese, but you'll probably say that I'm good before you've had enough calories. So you have to be careful with the cheese diet because it can make you lose weight. And that's one reason why we are as thin as we are, I think, is because we eat a lot of cheese. And so we're satisfied with a good, wholesome food like cheese without relying upon other empty calories for... By empty, I mean relatively empty calories.
Sure, that would be found in sugars or carbohydrates or other things like that.
Which I like, too.
I like those, too. Yeah, absolutely. Like
now,
those.
We have to supplement our cheese diet with these empty calories to be able to function.
Life is tough.
Yeah.
Life is tough. Well, you heard it here first on Cutting the Curd. Cheese is good for you, and you can lose weight
eating cheese. If you want to, but you shouldn't lose weight because, I mean, you reach your... I mean, some people should lose weight, but the cheese diet is not it's not a bad diet. And,
well, we have to take a quick break here on Cutting the Curd, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about Max's book and more about the wonderful world of cheese. Stick with us.
É melhor ser alegre que ser triste. Alegria é a melhor coisa que existe. É assim como a luz no coração. Mas pra fazer samba com beleza é preciso bocado de tristeza. É preciso bocado de tristeza. Se não se faz samba. Fazer samba não é contar piada. E quem faz samba assim não é de nada. O bom samba é uma forma de oração. Porque o samba é a tristeza que balança a tristeza.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Anne Saxelby. My guest today is Max McCalman, Dean of Curriculum, Maitre Fromager and Affineur at the Artisanal Cheese Center, and most recently author of the book Mastering Cheese, Lessons for Connoisseurship from a Maitre Fromager. And our show today has been sponsored by TechServe. So, Max, we were talking a little bit before the break about the classes that you offer at Artisanal, and I was interested to know about the master class. Who takes this class, and what are they professionals? Are they cheese lovers? Is it a mix?
Definitely cheese, well, maybe not all cheese lovers, but people that are considering a new career in the cheese world, either as a retailer. We do have some people in the restaurant business that the restaurant will say, well, we have a fromager in our restaurant, so we should send them to the Artisanal Cheese Center for the Master Series so they can learn more about this wonderful and diverse world of cheese and how to take care of it, how to store it, and how to serve it, and how to pair it, and also to learn about the nutritive values and the safety concerns and how to pair with wine and on. But the Master Series always seems to have many more women in it than men. And I was noticing the roster for the series that starts tomorrow. We have, I think it's about, we try to keep the master class fairly small so we can also spend some time actually working with the cheeses in affinage and giving the cheeses baths and turning them and brushing them, a little bit of that too. But out of the 15 people that are signed up, I think it's 11 of them are women and the rest are guys. And this is often the case.
Guys, if you want to meet women who know about cheese, sign up for the master class at Artisanal.
Yeah, meet some cheese chicks. Right?
Yeah, some cheese chicks. So can you take us through those 3 days? What do you guys do?
We spend a little bit of time on the history, about the evolution of cheese, about assessing cheeses, what makes a goat's milk cheese taste like a goat's milk compared to a sheep's milk, compared to a cow's milk. The families of cheeses can be also classified by rind type, washed rind, bloomy rind, or it could be blue cheeses, it could be natural rinded. How to describe cheese, a glossary of cheeses, lexicon of cheese, how to nurture cheeses,
the art of affinage.
And we do spend some time on cooking with cheese, on the kinds of conditions that cheeses elevate, do best in, the kind of cheese caves we have at the Artisanal Cheese Center, where I like to think of it as a day school for cheese. We acquire the cheese on the young side, and then we put them through day school and give them a little TLC until they're
positive reinforcement.
Exactly. We pat them down at night. We sing to them. We brush them and give them baths if they need baths.
Sure.
But it's mostly maintenance. It's not like we don't make cheese. We just try to make it happy.
Make it happy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Happier.
And it'll make happy tummies, hopefully, somewhere down the way.
Yeah. So who are some of your alumni from the master class that have gone on to do interesting cheese work? Can you think of anybody off the top of your head, or is it?
Gosh, there have been so many. They've been through the Artisanal Cheese Center's master series. The last series, we had one student that she flew all the way from Hawaii just for the master series, and that's the only reason she came to New York, is just to take the master series, because she said that we don't have enough cheese in Hawaii, and what we have is not that great. And so she wanted to make a part-time career as a cheese person in Hawaii. And so she's teaching classes in Hawaii now on cheese appreciation. And I think that's the longest distance that anyone's come for one of our classes. And we've had some people from Mexico come, but I think that they were actually a little closer than the person that came from Hawaii.
Yeah. How about Europeans? Do you ever have Europeans coming over to take the class?
No, we don't. No, I guess we just can't teach the Europeans very much about cheese.
Well, yeah, it's just interesting. I wonder, you know, there.
You know, this is where it's happening. I think the excitement, as you know, Anne, the excitement in the cheese world is occurring right here on our shores.
It is, yeah, because all of the old, the European cheeses are based on pretty strict AOC, DOC rules, which mm-hmm. have been in place for hundreds of years. And here people are really innovating and experimenting and creating some new cheeses that, you know, are really delicious and subscribe to none of those rules and various components combined of those rules together. And so I think, you know, it's just interesting. There is definitely a cross-pollination happening on the making side.
If only we could make and resell those young, unpasteurized cheeses.
Or like the Spanish cheeses and the Portuguese cheeses, like you were saying, La Serena and all that.
The Thistle Rendita types. There's some cheese that they do best where they were first created. And there's some cheeses that are like that. I tasted a cheese from Wisconsin recently that reminded me of one of those Thistle Rendita cheeses, but it's not a Thistle Rendita. It just had a similar texture and look and similar flavor, but a sheep's milk cheese from Wisconsin, from Hidden Springs Creamery in Wisconsin. And I thought, wow, this is as close as I've experienced to something like those Iberian Thistle Rendita cheese, but produced here in the United States. But wow. Of course, it's not exactly the same. But I think that it's very important that education be offered, and it's great that people are curious about cheese. And this is one reason why the American Cheese Society has endorsed our certification efforts for fromagers, cheesemongers mostly, but people that are describing cheese in a restaurant or at a retail setting, or someone that's in importing cheese or distribution, they should be able to represent the cheese accurately.
Yeah.
And be able to give the right kind of information to assure the end consumer as well as the cheese maker, that the cheese is delivered the way it's intended to be delivered, and that it's accurately described, and the information is there. So we're developing this certification program.
Who's developing? Who's behind that? Is it you and the ACS, or?
Well, the we've been at it now as a volunteer committee for almost 5 years, and the chairperson of our committee, my friend Sue Sturman, has been spearheading our efforts, and now the American Cheese Society, well, they did endorse our efforts, and so we did receive some money to find an outside certification agency to lead us into the next stage of the development of an exam, which will be an exam based upon a body of knowledge. And so we have gathered together subject matter experts to help us to consider all the many facets that are in the big, big world of cheese, so that we can make an exam that is credible and certifiable and legal.
Wow. And so that would be, again, you said that certification program would be for cheesemongers, for importers, for restaurant people and fromagers, and anybody else that I missed, or
right, or any. I would think that to be able to pass this exam, this is supposed to be something that's along the lines of the sommelier certification.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Certifications, but we would hope that anyone that wants to, who thinks that they might be able to pass the exam, should have at least a few years of experience in the cheese world, because it is a moving target, and so much that is happening in the cheese world. Again, it's happening here in the United States, but it's happening so quickly, it's hard to keep up with. As you know, it's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. That's another two full-time jobs in addition to your, your three or four full-time jobs that you're already holding down to try and anchor that certification program. Well, that's very exciting, because here, you know, we don't have a tradition as much of selling cheese and cheese appreciation, and so to have a place for people to go who mm-hmm. want to be able to train themselves before they get into the workplace, that would be really, really exciting. So unfortunately, we are running out of time here, but just for 2 quick seconds, I did want to talk about just kind of what has changed in the world of cheese since you first got your start at Picholine. What do you kind of see as some of the positive and or, you know, negative developments in the cheese world?
I think that one of the great positives in the cheese world is that now there is, with this growing connoisseurship of cheese, certainly the growing connoisseurship here in the United States, there is a recognition that that an unpasteurized milk cheese actually might be perfectly safe to eat, or a pasteurized cheese is not necessarily a quote-unquote safe cheese. So there's less fear about raw milk here. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the positive trends. If there's a negative, I think that there's an appreciation for flavored cheeses, where some sort of flavorings are added to a cheese, which actually take away from the milk itself.
Like the chipotle cheese or the peppercorn cheese.
Yeah, there's a place for that, certainly. But then I like to taste good, wholesome milk. Yeah. And if the wholesome milk comes through, that's really what it should be about at the end of the day, and not about the pepper or the pineapple or whatever it is.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Or curry.
We've both judged at many, mm-hmm. well, you at many cheese competitions, me just at one. But, you know, you get those categories sometimes and you're like, uh-oh, I got the smoked cheese category.
I got the bonehead category.
Yeah, exactly.
But there is a market for that. And that's one of those things that's a little bit disappointing about the cheese world. It's like that people, cheese lovers, admitted cheese lovers say, I like my flavored cheeses. That's fine. But yeah. One thing that about the raw milk appreciation is that not only do you have perhaps a safer cheese, but you also have a more flavorful cheese, a cheese that has better keeping qualities and with more delicious aromas and actually more nutritious, definitely, I think.
Well, if we could start, you know, another volunteer committee in our spare time, we could really put our noggins together and try to think about how to legalize raw milk cheeses that are less than 60 days old in this country.
Yeah, it's not fair to us. If we can eat a raw oyster in this country, but we can't choose to eat a young, unpasteurized cheese, I think there's something wrong there, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
although I do like my oysters.
Me too. If they ever started, don't mess with the oysters. They are perfect just as they are. Well, I thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
And
I would, it was a pleasure. And I would recommend that everybody who's listening go and pick up a copy of Max's new book. Again, the title is Mastering Cheese, Lessons for Connoisseurship from a Maitre Fromager. If you can't fly out to New York or you can't, sign up for one of Max's master classes, this is certainly a tome, no pun intended, of really valuable knowledge. But as a sort of a closing note, if someone does want to find out more about what you're doing at Artisanal, how can they find out about classes and things like that?
There is the Artisanal website, Artisanal cheese.com. And also my calendar of where I'm going to be. I didn't get this. I'm sorry, I don't have this on the calendar, but where I'm going to be either at a competition or at a conference or speaking somewhere. That's also on my website. That's Max McCallman, MaxMCCallman.com. And so that's pretty up to date too. So you can find out how I'm doing my part to spread the curd.
Spread the curd. Absolutely. We try to do that every Sunday here out at Roberta's. Well, I thank you so much again for coming out, and we will see you next Sunday for another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
For appearing on Cutting the Curd, Max is receiving a free Zagat New York City Food Lover's Guide. Zagat's New York City Food Lover's Guide is a one-stop resource to locate exotic ingredients, select the perfect caterer, shop for cookware or supplies, choose the finest gourmet foods, and more. For more information on Zagat, you can visit www.zagat.com. Thanks for listening to Cutting the Curd.